Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Conceive, believe, achieve. Shut the f*** up.
This is Believe You Me on the Gas Digital Network.
Believe You Me, we are back. Mr. Bisping, how are you, my friend?
Thank you for gracing us with your presence, Lewis. I am very, very well. Got to be honest, Harrington did a pretty good job yesterday or the other day, whichever day we're pretending that this is happening on. This is going to be released on Thursday or Friday, but whatever. On Tuesday's show, Harrington did pretty well, buddy.
Hey, look. I will gladly step aside for Mike Harrington. Good for you. Do you think that Mike Harrington can keep up doing a good job at anything for more than an hour at a time?
No.
Okay, there we go. We've settled it.
No. 100%. I'm totally with you. Listen, it was good. But God bless him. He's a good guy. He knows his MMA and he's a smart guy. He's good. He made some references yesterday about camping and Mark Twain and things like that. I thought Harrington's well read. I'm very, very surprised.
Don't ever say those fucking words to me again. Harrington's well read. Harrington has never read a book in his entire life. He's here right now, by the way. He's in the booth right now. Harrington, I want to say thank you very much for stepping in on Monday and filling in for me. Here's my problem with Harrington, okay? Can you do me a favor, pull up his tweet, his thanking me for allowing him to step. I want to just the douchiness that Harrington tweeted. If you could please pull this up for Mr. Bisping, because I don't want to misquote this. Because Harrington did do a very great job, and it's not like Harrington's an undiscovered talent. I gave Harrington a podcast. For years, he hosted the Hammer Fisting podcast, which I was the former host of, and I gave him that amazing brand. I gifted it to him. What did he do with it? He ran it into the ground. When it was done, Lewis,
we all need breaks here and there. We all have people that once upon a time we can say, did you a favor, give you a leg up, gave you a big break, believed in you, had passion, saw you and thought this man has potential. Okay, here's the tweet. An honor and a privilege to fill in for Luis J. Gomez on BYN with Bisping. Got to nerd out on the biggest news in MMA with the best analyst on the planet. Give it a listen now. Okay, what is wrong with that tweet?
That wasn't even the one.
Stop. Well, there you go. This is classic Harrington all over. That wasn't doesn't even bring up the right tweet.
That pull up the other one. Maybe it was a response to somebody else. Maybe somebody else was saying, it was a response to somebody saying that Harrington could be a permanent replacement. Just the words that he used was just so.
What words did he use?
I don't know. Harrington doesn't speak this way. Harrington lives in a garden. He smells like garbage. One time we had Harrington empty out his pockets on the other podcast just to see how much. It was just garbage upon garbage upon garbage in his pockets. It was like loose coins and gum. Yeah.
A banana peel. He's like, maybe I can smoke that because I've heard about that. What else was in there? Like chewing gum, perhaps.
It wasn't good.
Fluff, pennies.
He's a mess. So he takes on this professional persona on Twitter, which is just driving me out of my mind. Did you see it or no? You can't find it? It's fine. If you find it, it's fine. It doesn't even matter. The point is, I am complimenting Harrington. I am the one person in the world who believes in Harrington. Everyone else, including Michael Bisping, says, kick that guy to the curb. Get rid of him. Why do you guys have him around? I'm the one. You're not even denying it.
I've never said kick that guy to the curb. I've never said bloody, fire Harrington, make his life worse. I have never, ever said that. I have said the words, you get what you pay for. I have said those words. And I firmly believe in that. In life, you get what you pay for. Okay. Here is the tweet in question that Harrington took a while to bring up, but that's par for the course. It's good stuff. Do that shit again. You made Luis J. Gomez look replaceable, says Lazy Left Hand. And Harrington replies with, hardly. The American Puerto Rican rattlesnake is a world-class entertainer and broadcaster. I'm just an MMA nerd who has fun picking Bisping's brain with the kind of nonsense I post on here. Excited to have Lewis back tomorrow. Oh, listen, again. Don't interrupt me. What is wrong with that? He's giving you props. He's saying, no, Lewis is great. You're right. He's bigging you up. He's saying how privileged he was. There is nothing wrong with that whatsoever. Spelling perfect. Punctuation looked on point, although I haven't, you know, really looked at it. But altogether, I would say a professional tweet.
He's fired. That was the final straw. That tweet right there, that disrespect, the insubordination from Mike Harrington to go onto Twitter and to use big words. I don't like it. I don't like what he's trying to big dog me on the show. He's trying to big dog me on Twitter.
The guy said you should replace Lewis, and he said hardly. Hardly. You have an inferiority complex, Lewis. You have problems. You know, you've got issues, buddy. He comes on, he fills in for you because you shirk your responsibility. You go on a rather elaborate camping trip. I saw your setup on Twitter. This is no camping. That is not camping, my friend. You are not at one with the wilderness there. You might as well gone to a 5-star resort. You basically picked up a 5-star resort and dumped it in whatever forest you were in. Okay, that's not camping. You had TVs, you had projectors, you had chairs, you had cookers, you had all kinds of. I gotta say, we gotta look at the finances of this podcast, baby boy, because you're rolling hard right now.
Well, look, shout out to the great Robert Kelly, and he's a big camper. I don't really go camping. I went camping once when I was like 19, and it was horrible. We got lost in the woods, and we couldn't find a campsite, so we ended up camping on a soccer field, like a high school soccer field. Just getting drunk and stoned, and that was that. But this was really
cool.
Yeah, my buddy has a bunch of great stuff, and yes, he did have a projector, which is the size of a cell phone. You get them at, you know, at like a Target. You get a projector that plugs right into your phone. The kids at night, they want to watch a movie. What are they going to do at night? They're having some marshmallows. We tell some stories.
Whoa! Yeah, you sit around the campfire. You use the amazing imagination that children have that they are born with, and you're just going to fuel it. You're going to throw a little seeds, sit them around the campfire, roast marshmallows, do s'mores, as you Americans like to call it. By the way, for English, s'more is a marshmallow with chocolate on, as you guys call it, a graham cracker. It's a graham cracker, okay? Graham. My father-in-law is called Graham. Everywhere he goes, they don't understand his name. They say, Graham, Graham. He's like, no, it's Graham. They cannot say it. It's Graham and it's Craig. It's not Graham and Craig, okay? Anyway, back to the thing. Roast the marshmallows. Tell ghost stories. Talk about the time. Talk about your childhood. Talk about your grandparents that are no longer with poor James, you know? Yeah. Fuel the imagination. Say, ooh, did you hear that in the bushes? It could be a grizzly bear. Basically terrified the little fox.
I did that. I bought fake poop. I put it in the tent. I was like, oh my God, a bear was in the tent. A bear was in the tent. It was great. And then I also bought one of the...
Oh, really? Fucking awesome.
In fact, Harrington, go get my bag. I have it in the top of my bag. In fact, this is Brian's awesome backpack that he lent me. It's a little prank. This was way too bad for my 6-year-old son because there's a little shop and there's like a bunch of little pranks, like almost like a Spencer's Gifts. I don't know if you guys had that in England, but it was like a little gift shop that would have like pranks and stuff. And
Spencer never made it out here, unfortunately.
No. It's not Spencer. It's Spencer. It's Spencer, not Spencer.
Oh, Spencer, I did not know that this Spencer was French, you know? I did not know this.
I agree with you, Mike.
But there's it looks like a nail's going through your finger. It's like a bandage, and the nail has a bend in it, and it goes on your finger. So I run out, I'm like, and my son, he's a pussy. He just starts crying immediately. Not even a moment to register that it could be a prank or whatever it is. So I had to pull it off.
To be fair, to a 6-year-old, you know, it might catch him off guard and surprise him. But it sounds like you went into the lamest 80s joke shop ever. I mean, what's next? One of those like headbands that on one side is that part of a knife and then it goes over your head on the other side. You got the knife sticking in. Like, oh, my God, James, I've been stabbed in the head. Look at me.
Very, like, very insensitive. My former manager, my father was stabbed. All right, you're triggering, Mike. Okay, really? Wow. Okay, I understand where you're going with these things, piece of shit.
Oh, shit. Well, for what it's worth, my sincere apologies for bringing up such devastating and traumatizing occurrences in your life. My bad. I'm sorry. Okay. When I was a kid, I liked the fake knife through the head joke. Okay. I'm sorry. My childhood and your childhood was different. What? You can talk about yours, but I can't talk about mine. If I want to wear a fake knife through my head, I'm sticking that motherfucker on. Later on, I'm a contender. I got a fake knife through the head. Deal with it.
Dude, fake knife through the head was the most traumatizing prank when I was a child. You could not get, there's not a worse prank that you could have done with me.
Oh, look, God. What are you looking for? Fake shit?
Ow. Oh, my finger.
Ah. What have you done? Ah, crap. How do you, Lewis, how did you do that? You were just looking through your bag a second ago.
I don't know. I just started nailing my bag to the floor.
Oh, God. The old nailing the bag to the floor routine. I know. It always goes wrong.
I was afraid that Harrington was going to try to steal and sleep in my bag one more time. So I nailed it to the floor in front of me and I put a nail through my finger. But yeah, this was it. My son cried like a baby.
Yeah. Oh, bless him. Well, he cares. He cares for you, Lewis.
He's a good boy. You know? It was great, though. The camping experience was incredible. Besides the projector, that was the only thing that I would say was a little bougie. Throughout, we slept outside. We had a deal with bugs.
Oh,
we cooked. Oh, yeah. We slept in a tent. No.
Listen,
not a cabin.
Listen, I'm joking, to be honest, because you inspired me. I'm like, oh, my God, when I go camping, I've got to do the same thing because, yeah, you do want to tell ghost stories or whatever. Well, Lucas would hate ghost stories because he's a bit of a wimp like that. Well, fair enough. He just doesn't want to be scared. I mean, that's not a normal emotion. Ooh, scare the shit out of me while I sleep in the woods. It's never a good thing. Yeah. And those projectors, you're right, I see them. They're advertised on Netflix. On Instagram all the time saying, this is how I need to watch Netflix. You just project it to the wall, whatever. So I'm going to get one. I'm going to buy the chairs. You inspired my camping trip, Lewis. I'm going to copy.
Yeah. You got to do it, man. And we had a lot of fun. We had some steaks. We had some burgers. Corn on the cob over an open flame. You just roast it in there. I'm telling you right now, little tip, which I did not know, if you take water and soak the corn in water first and let the water get inside of the green, you know, what do they call it? The stalk on the outside of the corn? Then when you put it over the flame, it steams it essentially inside. And you can cook it way less time and it comes out perfect.
I like to call it nature's tin foil. Or what do you call it? Aluminum foil.
Aluminium.
Aluminium.
Aluminium. Yeah.
What do you call it? Yeah, anyway,
aluminum.
Who cares?
Aluminum. So, yeah, it was incredible.
No. But what do you call tin foil?
I call it tin foil. I call it aluminum foil. Reynolds Wrap is the brand. I grew up calling it Reynolds Wrap because that was the brand. Reynolds was the brand that we would use.
And you call cling film Saran Wrap.
Cling film.
That's what we call it because it clings and it's film.
It's awful. Yeah, Saran Wrap.
When I was a kid... Did you ever want to just, I tried it so many times, but it never works. You know, you put the Saran Wrap over the toilets and when people pee, it bounces off it and gets them wet. Did you ever try that as a kid?
No, I never, my mom would have fucked me up so badly and almost rightfully so. I'm a peaceful parent, but I will say right now, if my son made me shit all over my ass cheeks or pee all over the place, it would be a pretty angry day in the Gomez household. But my mom was so violent, there was no doing that. I remember one time I did the thing where I took tape and I put it, the thing in the faucet. It's like you pull it, it's like a hose essentially where you could do the dishes with.
Yep.
And I put tape around it. It was facing her. So when she went to go turn on the water, it just sprayed at her. And yeah, I mean, she literally had like a 4-round boxing match with me. Like we had breaks, we had rounds. It was brutal. So, and that was just water.
You know, talking of which, I saw a tweet you put on the other day, which was pretty interesting. And it was a good point. You said it was about beating your child. You know, I said, what did you say about beating a child and the child can't leave? But I'll let you explain.
Yeah, I said, essentially, I put it in quotes, my kid was acting up this morning. So I had to hit her or something like that. And then I said, if you just change kid to wife. I tweeted, I hit my wife was acting up this morning. So I had to sit her down and give her a spanking. And then I was like, if you just change wife to kid, it's completely acceptable. And the reality is your kid can't leave. Your wife can leave. So why is it acceptable to hit your kid, but it's not acceptable to hit your wife? And I'm not saying that it's acceptable to hit your wife.
Do you know why? Because those little fuckers need to learn, Lewis. They got to learn.
Why?
It's my way or the fucking high or both. Both, okay? It's my world and everyone's living in it. No, listen, you can't hit your kids. You cannot hit your kids. Well, no, well, listen. No, I don't hit my kids. I don't. This wasn't the plan to talk about this, but you know, I do think a little bit, you know, because they do run out of control and there's no repercussions for their bad behavior. I'm not saying hit your children. I was beat. Dad, listen, you're listening to the show. He kicked the fuck out of us. And he thinks it's very, very funny these days when we talk about it. I remember we told a story once and he, you know, he was laughing about it. He goes, yeah, yeah, good times, son, good times. I'm like, yeah, maybe for you, wasn't that good for me, Dad, being on the receiving end? I'm not a child beater.
Right.
I think once, I'm trying to think. See, it might have happened once or twice. I might have just like a little spank on the bottom. Do you know what I mean? But I don't know if I even did that. I don't even know if I have. I don't think I did.
Yeah, the reality is, like, you know, we've talked about it before. It's a lazy way to parent, and I don't want to judge people. The problem is when you start talking about this, people, number one, they think you're judging them, and then number two, they go, all right, well, you're judging my parents, because everyone's parents kicked the shit out of them. We were not, if you're above the age of 30, it's very rare you find a person under the age of 30 that their parents didn't hit them. But I do think that there's this weird sort of rebuttal to the whole peaceful parenting thing where they're like, oh, well, this is the problem with today's society is kids are running out of control. It's because nobody's there to hit them. And you're like, first of all, plenty of kids are getting the shit beat out of them. If you look at violent criminals, I guarantee you every violent criminal in prison, with very rare exception, has experienced some sort of traumatic violence as a child, usually from their parents, usually from their mother, or probably their mother, because a lot of times the father's not in this the picture. But you can't tell me that there's not a connection there. I know there's a connection there.
Lewis, times are changing, baby. Times are changing. Listen, yes, back in the 70s, well, prior to that, 60s, 70s, 80s, and before, yeah, parents would beat you up. You would drive a car with no seatbelt. You could slap a nice-looking girl on the ass, and it was totally fine. Doctors would prescribe you cigarettes and say, take this to calm your nerves. Times are changing, doggy. Times are changing.
Well, I still slap Shannon on the ass in the studio. That's one of the cool things about Gas Digital is we live like we're 1945.
And how does she take it?
She loves it. She loves it. Look, she's crying right now. But those are tears of joy.
Yeah.
Mike, real quick, let's take a moment and talk about So Right, which I've been using. Now that I'm back in the gym, I'm telling you right now, I don't have the money to go to a massage therapist every time I work out. So I've been using the So Right personal massager. It's basically like having a personal massage therapist right at your home.
Oh, yeah. No, that absolutely really is. Listen, a lot of people, you know, they're sitting at a desk all day. They're, or like me, you're on planes a lot. Sounds very la-di-da. Whatever it is, you know, you're not getting the correct attention. You don't have the time or the money or whatever, you know, the reason is to go, you know, get a massage and get somebody to put their forearm and their elbow into your back and get worked on, you know, by a professional. But with So Right, you can work out that tension in your psoas, you know. Now, listen, I know you're thrusting things into my mouth and you think I have a psoas, but that's not the problem because now I have a So Right, okay? And basically what it is it's a little device and you can get into those little nooks and crannies and, you know, you manipulate it and just get rid of the tightness in your back, your hips, your necks, your shoulders, and much, much more. You can reduce muscle tension, increase circulation, and prevent injuries and add to your range of motion while never having to go to said masseuse ever again, Lewis.
Yeah, and it's super portable, so you can put it right in your suitcase. It's really small. It's not electric. It's literally, it fits on, you put it on the floor, and it's just shaped in a way where it mimics the forearm and the corners of the elbows, so it sort of mimics the way an actual massage therapist really gets in there and massages you very, very deep. I love this thing. I know you love it as well, Michael Bisping, and we have a really great deal for the listeners of the Believe in Me podcast. Right now, if you guys go to soright.com, that is P-S-O-R-I-T-E, soright.com, and use the promo code Bisping20, you save 20% off your entire order. So go grab your So Right personal massager, that is PSO-RITE, and use that promo code Bisping20 to save 20%, and it will change the way that you are recovering for the rest of your life. All right, where were we?
So I just came back from Uruguay, as you know, and now I've got to commentate the Contender Series very, very shortly.
What happened? You were coming back from Uruguay, and you told me you were in a car with Jorge Masvidal.
Yeah, no, Jorge, yeah. Great guy. We talked about this on the show with Harrington, so I won't spend too much time on it. But he is going to come on the podcast. He brought it up, or I brought it up, whatever, but he said, yeah, no problem. So I'm looking forward to that happening. He's very busy right now. He's doing a lot of traveling. So give us a few weeks or so, and Jorge's going to come on. And, you know, I said it to Harrington yesterday. We're very similar in many ways. And Reed Harris, that used to run the WEC, the UFC bought, WEC from Reed Harris, and now he works for the UFC. You know, he was actually the one that took that picture that I put on Instagram. And he's like, I knew you guys would get on because you're basically the same guy, you know. And when I spoke to him, I do see a lot of myself in him, you know, his realness, his authenticity and things like that. And his willingness to throw down at the drop of a hat, which you got to respect, to be honest. And his career is on fire right now. So he's going to come on the podcast. So thank you for that, Jorge. Very, very kind. Looking forward to that. And I know a lot of people on Twitter are talking about that, saying, when is Jorge coming on? So that will be happening soon.
I hope so. Very cool. It's is it not awkward at all? Like, do you guys, is it sort of like the first time you guys actually had a real conversation? Was it just kind of like, because I mean, you mentioned like the time you had said, you said what's up and good luck in this fight. And that, I think that sort of put the I guess, took the air out of the tires or took the steam out of the situation. But is it sort of an awkward vibe or are you guys legitimately like get along now?
Yeah, well, no, not awkward at all. You know, he's not an awkward guy. I'm not an awkward guy. We met at the post-fight show, if you remember, when he knocked out Ben Askren, and he was very cordial, and he was more than cordial. He was very friendly, and we shook hands and had a little hug there. Look at that. Look at the smiles. Look at the smiles on that. There we are. Beautiful, beautiful people. No, it wasn't awkward at all. And then from there, you know, once that was passed, then we just had a chance to, like, you know, shoot the shit a little bit. I saw him at the weigh-ins. I went over, I said hi, you know, and then I said, let's get a picture. And he's, you know, kind of laughed and said, yeah, let's do it. And then I saw him at the bar. We had a few shots together.
Uh-oh. Here we go. What's his choice of drink?
Well, no, it was my choice. I was getting the tequila in for everybody. So I walked over and thrust one in his hand. And then there might have been one or two others.
Did you say you walked over and thrusted one in his hand? Quote him. Chop it up. It's a new drop. Oh.
Listen, if I like you, I will thrust into your hands and you will receive it with great pleasure. Oh, my God. You got to be careful what you say in this world. So, yeah, anyway, no, not awkward at all. He's cool.
This is
man.
Why I like drinking with Michael Bisping, because Mike is just like, there's something about guys who drink, who know how to drink. I know you're basically sober now, but I'm talking about back in the day when you were really, you know, when you were really drinking, not just for tradition or for the sake of being polite, like I'm sure you were doing that night. But I know you know how to drink because Mike said to me, he was like, yeah, I don't drink whiskey. And then I ordered a shot of whiskey and I was like, you're not going to take a shot of whiskey with me? Like I almost challenged him to the idea that he's not going to drink a shot of whiskey with me. And that's all it took. And then four shots of whiskey later.
Well, see, because the way I look at it, it's bad manners. Yeah, it's etiquette. Someone's going to do a shot of whiskey. So I'll join you in a shot of whiskey. And honestly, I do drink a lot less these days. You know, last night I went out for dinner with the writer of my book, Quitters Never Win, Anthony Evans, Ant Park on Instagram and things. We had dinner last night. I had one glass of wine, you know, and everyone's like, oh, he's in Vegas. He's drinking. No, I had one glass of wine and went to bed. But when we have family over to the house, I kind of dread it. You know, don't get me wrong, it's lovely to see them, but they want to drink. They want to enjoy themselves. They're on holiday. It's their vacation. They want to have a barbecue and have a few beers and a few glasses of wine or whatever. And I'm not going to not drink with them. Do you know what I mean? Because I'm the host. And if you want to drink whiskey, I'll have a whiskey with you. I just think it's annoying and somewhat insulting. For example, we had a surprise birthday party for Rebecca's 35th birthday. And we invited a ton of people. Right. And it was a surprise party. And it went down great. And at the end, I got a few bottles of champagne and we all did like a big toast. Cheapest champagne they had on the menu. I said, what is the cheapest shit you have? Because I'm going to have to buy a few bottles. So, you know, I'm not giving it the big one. And everybody was poured a glass of champagne. And this one person that shall remain nameless was like, no, I've got a big date tomorrow. I'm not partaking. No, I'm fine. And I was like, you cunt. You're a cunt. Could you not just sit there and go along with it, raise the glass, toast, and then say to whoever, your husband or whatever, say, hey, do you want that? I don't want to drink it. You didn't need to turn down taking part in the toast. I just find it to be bad manners. So if you want to drink whiskey, Lewis, and you present one, you thrust into my hands, I will accept your thrusting.
I thrusted one right into your mouth.
I know. And it was awesome. It was so salty and great.
He's like, thank you, sir. May I have another? I was like, I'll thrust another one into his mouth. We're partying, baby.
I think, do you think you can do it? You think you can give me another? Are you man enough to give me another one? Let's go. Oh, my God.
Look, all I know is off
the deep end.
At least 4 or 5 times I thrusted one down your throat that night. That is a fact, without question.
Oh, God, this is great. This is great. Okay. I've got too much longer, unfortunately. So, massive fights this weekend. We have to talk about them, Lewis. We do. We do.
Before I would love, by the
way, let me just finish what I was going to say. I would love, by the way, to just do this and just bullshit. Do you know what I mean? Because I generally have a laugh. I do. But then the flow of the show is supposed to be MMA driven and whatnot. And these are big fights and we do need to talk about them. But yes, please, sir, go ahead.
I just want to say that I cannot get your book in the States, which is annoying. It's available for pre-order still, correct?
Here's the thing. There's a very good reason. Everybody on Instagram that keeps messaging me, and by the way, I appreciate the kind messages. I got to be careful, man. My voice is going already, and I got to commentate. I got to be silky smooth. It's not released in the US yet. That's why. It's plain and simple. I will send you a signed copy, Lewis. I'll put a little note in there. I'll say, thank you for thrusting in my mouth. I'll write something
to
that.
If it doesn't say, thank you for thrusting into my mouth, then a heart and Bisping, and that's it, I am going to put the book in a paper shredder. I won't read it.
Thank you. Thank you for thrusting the liquid into my mouth.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'll send you one. It gets released in the US later. I think early next year, actually.
November.
Yeah, obviously, it's different territories, different publishers. You got to print the books, all the rest of it. So it will be coming soon. All right, let's get into these fights.
All right, we'll talk later about it because I do think, I just feel like everyone wants this book right now. I feel like we could have. Anyway, good. Go. Talk about the fights. This weekend. Anaheim, wish it could be there. We're supposed to be there. Everything was supposed to happen. We had our tickets ready to go. Everyone making our special trip. Going to get 2 or 3 live Believing Me podcasts in person. Bisping will be in Hawaii. God bless your soul. God bless your family. I'm so depressed that we're going to watch this at a fucking Hooters in Queens somewhere. Life sucks. But this is a pretty goddamn incredible card. All bullshit aside, I'm so pumped about both the main event and co-main event. People seem to be more excited about the return of Nate Diaz than the heavyweight championship of the world, which is pretty interesting. But where do you want to start here, Mr. Bisping?
Well, let's start with Paulo Costa versus Yoel Romero. Yeah? You know, sure. And then work our way up to the main event. I mean, did we talk about this? I don't think we did. We stayed away from it for that reason. So, no, we didn't. I'm just looking at the notes that Harrington gave us. Let's just break down Harrington's notes. Let's see what he did. Okay. Big three. Paulo Costa versus Yoel Romero. This is what Harrington's written. The fight was initially booked nearly a year ago for UFC 230 at MSG. However, Romero was not cleared by his doctors for a fight that early, and it was pulled from the card. They tried to set it up for UFC Sunrise just outside of Miami. But instead, Jack Array got the call. And then Romero was forced to withdraw and was replaced by Jack Hermansson. As a result of that shuffling, neither man has slept in the octagon for over a year. Romero's last fight was against Robert Whittaker in what was supposed to be the champ's first title defense, but Romero came in overweight and thus he was not eligible to win the title. Romero facts, 13-3, with 11 of those wins coming by KO. He's got 9-2 in the UFC. His only 2 losses coming by decision to current champ, Robert Whittaker. He's only been stopped once in his career. This is Romero's first non-5-round fight since November. Pretty good, Harrington. Pretty good, I've got to say. Decent info. Decent info. I wanted to hate on it, but no, it's good stuff. Paulo Costa, 12-0, undefeated, 4-0 in UFC. Finished every fight he's been in with 11 KOs and 1 choke. Finished every UFC fight he's had, other than his one fight with Uriah Hall. And he's beaten Johnny Hendricks, Uriah Hall, Olawale Bamgoje. It's a good fight, man. It's a good fight. Costa hits hard as fuck. Romero hits hard as hell. You do some talking. Let me rest my voice. What are you going to say?
Yeah, I mean, this is... especially when you have such an amazing breakdown by Harrington. I mean, everything's laid out right in front of us like that. Makes it easy to talk about. Yeah, this fight's incredible. You know, Romero, as much as we'd love to hate on the guy for as long as we have hated on the guy, he's an unbelievable athlete, super explosive. Costa's super explosive. One of the things that I find interesting, I didn't know that. This is the first time Romero's done a three-round fight in a while. Romero, I almost feel like he gets a kind of a bad reputation of about not having good cardio, but I think he just sort of he paces himself. You know, he's gone a few five-round fights recently, and I think when he has a now he has an opportunity to fight a three-round fight, we might see him just be crazy explosive the entire fight. I think that's going to only favor Romero.
That's actually a really good point, and it's factual. See, Romero does not stall. He conserves energy. He does, and it's a smart move. Somebody that's heavily muscled. And by the way, Lewis, I guarantee you didn't watch the show the other day. I kind of formally apologized to Yoel Romero for accusing him of the steroids. I did. Well, listen, the court of law has given him $27 million. So you can't deny that obviously he wasn't taking steroids, you know, and that's why he got the $27 million, because the court of public opinion was that he was taking steroids. And if that's the case and he wasn't, then listen, you're going to be man enough to say, all right, well, fair enough, I was wrong. But he is still heavily muscled regardless. And, you know, that uses a lot of oxygen. So he takes his time and he does lose rounds. He lost rounds against Whitaker. He kind of almost lost a round against Rockhold. And he waits for the right time. But when he explodes, it's frightening. It's absolutely terrifying.
And also, if I just had a look at him, I would still probably guess he's using steroids. I'm just saying that case.
You know. Listen, he's taking the right supplements. We'll say that.
He's really smart about whatever doctors he's working with. He's an incredible athlete.
Hey. I'm building the allegiance with Cuba now. Okay?
I forgot.
Do not come in and burn the bridges before they're even finished. You know, it's like my construction team, they're building the bridge. It's almost there. It's almost ready. It's ready for the grand unveiling. You know what I mean? And you're like, no, fuck it. Burn the bastard. Burn it. Rip it down. I'm like, no, Lewis, what are you doing? Very soon I can go back to Miami. I can walk around safe and not be murdered and stabbed. You know, next time you see me with a knife through my head, it will not be a fake one. It will be a real one if you continue to do this.
That's racist. He's saying that Cubans carry knives and that are willing to stab. Very racist.
Dana White literally told me after that happened with Yoel and I ripped up the Cuban flag, a bit of pantomime joking. He said, bro, do not go to Cuba. You're going to get stabbed. And I did get lots of death threats through Instagram. So, you know.
I don't take death threats through Instagram as real. That's just like, It's the least intimidating way to threaten somebody's life, you know.
Do you want to know my reaction to an Instagram death threat?
What do you do?
Look at that. Hey, babe, come here. Look at this. This fucking dickhead says he's gonna stab me next time I go to Miami. I might just go to Miami to see what happens. You know, it doesn't register. It doesn't register. I know. It's not. It's bullshit. It's just some kid. You know what I mean?
Well, this is why I think that happens a lot. Like, comedians talk about getting death threats on the internet. I'm like, yeah, it's easy to write three words into a fucking thing and hit send. It's a lot more difficult to show up with a knife, have motive, ruin your entire... To kill somebody, you're giving up your entire life, essentially. Even if you're on the lam...
It's a lot of work. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? You got to track the guy down. You got to devise a way that you're actually going to kill him. You know, you got to stalk the guy. You might have to fly to another city. That's expensive. I'm just going to say this, you know, and no offense to all murderers out there, but if you're a murderer, maybe your life isn't going the way you want it. Does he have the flight? Does he have the cash to fly to another city?
Do you think that he's picked up the miles? Probably not. You know, it's going to be hard to do.
He's not going to get upgraded, that's for sure. He's in economy. When he gets there, depending on the length of the flight, he's going to be very, very tired. Jet lag is a real thing, okay? He's going to miss the date. He's going to sleep in. The target was supposed to be outside Best Buy at 4 p.m., doing a signing, and he's in bed. Jet lagged up to fuck. I feel sorry for the guy, if I'm honest.
Yeah, it's very true. And also, if you're going to do that, let's say something that you say, Michael Bisping says something on this podcast, you're like, I'm going to murder this guy. This is it. Fuck it. It's on, baby. I'm going to come kill Michael Bisping. Yep. Right? I mean, unless you are so well-to-do, by the time you book your flight and get to the city that you have to be in, you're probably going to be over it. You're not going to be so enraged anymore. You're going to be enraged about the next thing on the internet, and you probably are threatening the next guy.
Unless you're Conor McGregor and a bunch of Irish people on a private jet flying over the Atlantic.
Yeah.
Right? Because at no point in that mission or that journey did they get halfway across the Atlantic and the booze and whatever had worn off. And they're like, you know, what are we doing?
They can't.
What are we doing here?
Because
you can't. At that point, mob mentality.
Yes. Well, half of them thought it. Half of them were like, I'm not even mad anymore. But you're here. You at this point, you're just fucking here. I've been there before where I've gotten into fights with like kids that when I was a kid, like in high school, where it's like, by the time the fight happened, neither of us were even angry anymore. So it's like, what are we even doing here? We're just going through the motions.
Yeah, it's, well, in for a penny, in for a pound. It's like, well, I've come this far, then sorry, we're going all the way. All right, guys, I want to talk to you about Monday.com. What is Monday.com? Let me tell you. A team management tool we just started using. Well, you started using it at Gas Digital, and I just started using it at home. I'm doing all my research. I've got all these files. I've got things like that. It just helps me stay very, very organized. Monday.com is a lifesaver and has completely changed how we track projects and make sure that stuff is getting done. Instead of emails, spreadsheets, random audio files, this really does sound like my prep work for UFC commentary, whiteboards with to-do lists and random post-it notes, Monday.com organizes and tracks everything in one place. And the best part of Monday.com is that it's intuitive. This took us no time to get set up. It's flexible, can easily customize for your workflow, and it's easy to stay organized and find files. We used to have to search through audio files. I used to have to do error checks, graphics, looking at my emails and all that stuff. It's a goddamn nightmare. But Monday.com organizes everything that I need in one place, so I'm not wasting time searching for things that I need, Lewis.
I know. Here at Gas Digital, we love it because, for example, Brian works on 5 different shows. So now he has a different Monday.com page for every show, different sections within Monday.com and different than those pages. So whether it's ad reads, there's video files, audio files, different things that we need before and after the show, it's super organized. Michael Bisping, the business, right? So let's say you have your UFC Tonight stuff. That could be one section. Your podcast stuff is another section. Your gym, where you guys are opening new gym locations, is another section. People that are working for you can have only access to certain sections so you can keep them accountable. It's really cool. I love this website. It's turned the workload over here. Maybe 10 times more work we're getting done because of the organization in Gas Digital right now. And the platform is suitable for any size team, from 2 freelancers working together to thousands collaborating across the globe. Mr. Bisping, let them know how they can try this for free. This is incredible.
Yeah, no, it really is. If this sounds like something that you need, then honestly, I really, really thoroughly recommend it. So yeah, you want to try it? Go to monday.com/believe, and they're going to give you a 14-day free trial. Okay, 14 days free, no commitment. You can check out monday.com and see for yourself how helpful their software is. One more time, that's monday.com/believe. You get a 14-day free trial. Check it out. No commitment, none of that business. And you will see exactly what we're talking about, okay? You will know it will make a difference. It will make you more efficient, more proficient, more organized. You will come across like a business genius, like a man that's really got his shit together. And, you know, who doesn't want to be that guy? That's like, ooh, there goes a guy. He's got his shit together. He's organized. He's got his emails in a well-categorized fashion. Yes, that could be you. Monday.com/believe. And that's it. Yeah, so as I say, there's no commitment. So check out Monday.com and see for yourself how helpful their software is. One more time, Monday.com/believe for a 14-day free trial. Okay, let's get back to the show. Yeah. Anyway, back to the fight. So Paulo Costa, the advantage that he has is that he has a really, really high output. He throws more strikes. Excuse me. Now he is undefeated. Yoel, I think he was undefeated until Whittaker. I might be wrong on that. But both of them don't have many losses. Costa is undefeated. Yoel might have one or two.
Yeah, but Yoel's got a way higher caliber fighter and higher caliber competition. Yoel's fought a bunch of former champions and you know, looked great. Whereas Costa, for the most part, I mean, Johnny Hendricks and was it Uriah Hall? I mean, those are good wins, but it's not like, oh, my God.
No, it's nowhere near the level of competition that Yoel has fought. So you got... Honestly, if you had to, make me pick a winner, I'd say Yoel. But I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if Costa pulls it off. Yoel's been out for a little while. Although he doesn't seem to age, he's getting older. I'm not sure what his actual age is, but he's no spring chicken, and Costa's probably in his prime. It's a great fight, though. I can't wait for it. Really excited for that one.
Official pick, although
I'm not too sold on it, I'll lean towards Yoel. I'll lean towards Yoel.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think Yoel wins that fight just because of the experience factor, the fact that it's a three-round fight, he's going to be super explosive. And whereas when somebody's undefeated, I do go, oh, shit, we've never seen them. You know, it's hard to kind of make a decision based off of like how to beat them. We've never seen him lose. But at the same time, you know, when you sort of consider the fact that we've never seen him lose, he's never fought somebody anywhere near as, you know, tough as Romero. So, yeah, I agree with you completely.
Yep. All right, cool. Co-main event, Diaz, Pettis. The return of Nate Diaz after, what, 3 years, right? Three years.
Crazy long layoff. And yeah. I guess Harrington had pointed this out, or maybe it was Brian that pointed it out before the show started. I guess on the countdown shows, you know, where they have the segments on YouTube, twice as many people viewing the Anthony Pettis and Nate Diaz breakdown versus Stipe versus Cormier, for what it's worth. I don't know that it takes anything away from Stipe and Cormier, because I'm sure those videos are being watched more than most other ones. But I think Nate Diaz coming back after a three-year layoff, it just goes to show you that's how, because it's not Pettis. I mean, no offense to Pettis, he's great, but you know, people are watching those videos because they want to see what the fuck Nate Diaz is going to say and do.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And to be honest, you can use the conversion of YouTube views into the public's interest. For example, you know, or like you know, I've read articles where people are trying to devise how many pay-per-views were sold on a pay-per-view event. And they'll look at the viewing figures for the prelims, right? And they'll say, well, for UFC 100 or, you know, I don't know, a big one, UFC 200, the prelims on FS1 did this amount. And the pay-per-views we know historically now with this amount. And then let's pick another event that did low. They'll say, well, if you look at that, we see that the FS1 prelims did a much, much lower number and the pay-per-view was low. So they do correlate. You know,
I'm sure if you were a smart mathematician, you can take every UFC prelim, everything, and probably put together an actual real like formula to figure out what it is that was accurate, I'm sure.
An algorithm.
And then predict future pay-per-views.
Oh, look, my God. Go on.
1.3 million views for the countdown, Anthony Pettis versus... so, yeah. Look, that is very interesting. And, yeah, you're right. You can. Look, this is the beautiful part about social media, and YouTube is a part of that. We can quantify it all. There's no debate. You can see how popular somebody is, how many fans somebody has. You can see how many people are viewing their shows. And you can kind of deduce how popular something is. Nate Diaz is a major star. Not many stars like him. The Diaz brothers, I mean, obviously there's Connor, there's the Diaz brothers. There's not many other people out there that it's just singular guys that you put them on a card and then everyone's eyes are drawn to it. You know, it's very few.
Well, he's captivating. You know, the way, number one, the way he fights and the way he talks. You know, he's a very interesting individual. I mean, there was a piece with, I only saw it was like a 15-second clip on Instagram with Brett Okamoto interviewing him. And he says, so you've kind of been like a white whale or a white dolphin. I forget what it was. What do you think of that? And Diaz just goes, I don't know what a white whale is. And I forget Brett Okamoto's response, but it was like, it was a good analogy that he used. But even though that was just something so silly, it was captivating the way Diaz said it. Do you know what I mean? He's an interesting guy. He's good to watch on the microphone. He's got an interesting personality. Of course, he's got a, you know, do or die attitude inside the cage. He's tough as fuck. He's got a great chin, excellent jiu-jitsu, cardio for days. Striking is very, very good. And he's exciting as hell. Walks forward and he's a badass. You know, he's talking shit to his opponents. His jiu-jitsu is world class. He's sticking up the double birds as he's sinking in triangles. You know, his post-fight speeches are awesome. I mean, come on, what an iconic line when Joe Rogan said, you know, blah, 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 blah. And he's like, I'm not surprised, motherfuckers. You know, I'm not surprised, motherfuckers. It was great.
Beautiful.
One of the best lines ever. One of the best lines ever. So
was it Nate or Nick that said, Trained by day, Joe Rogan podcast by night. That was Nick, right?
Oh, I have no idea, but I have heard that.
Another great little soundbite. Yeah, I mean, yeah, dude, he's fucking everything. He's got it all.
And adding to that, the fact that he has been away for so long. You know, just like in anything, absence makes the heart grow fonder. He's got legions of fans out there that have been waiting for him to make a return, and now here it is. So it's no surprise that the YouTube figures are higher. I don't think that necessarily correlates to the public's interest. You know, it's just that Diaz has been away for so long, and they know that he's going to say controversial shit. So they want to see what he has got to say.
And not for nothing, and I hate to always bring it back to him, but it is the truth. His last two fights were against Conor McGregor, which just, you know, that imprint in people's minds, it's like Conor has so much shine that actually does have value there as well. It's like, oh, is he going to talk about Conor? If he wins this fight, is Conor going to be the next one? He did go 1-1. It does seem to be the sort of dangling carrot that's out there for both, not only for him, but for the public as well. I think mostly everybody wants to see that fight, obviously behind him, Conor versus Khabib. So, yeah, he's got it all. But 3 years off is a very long time, my friend. Very, very long time. And it's, I think more often than not, we see that affect fighters in a negative way than not affect them at all. And you can name examples where it hasn't affected them at all, but I think it is. I love the Diaz brothers, but I'm nervous for Nate Diaz in this fight.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Now, listen, you're going to notice a change in my tempo of speaking, and perhaps I'm going to speak lower because my voice is starting to break, and I have to commentate on the contender, the podcast yesterday. The podcast today is tearing my vocal cords to shreds,
bring it down.
And I will explain why. When I was training for tonsillitis, I'm going off on a tangent. I couldn't breathe. And I would say to my wife, I can't breathe. I'd be like, I can't breathe. And she'd be like, Michael, stop it. You're fine. Eventually, I went to a doctor and he stuck a camera down my throat. And his first words were, oh my God, how are you breathing? Because your throat is entirely swollen.
He's like, it looks like somebody threw a couple things down your throat earlier. What is going on down here?
And it's all congealed in there. Very sticky, viscous substance. No, and I immediately looked at my wife and I'm like, see, because she'd been doubting me for so long. And the doctor said, because with my accent, you know, I talk and like, you know, I get kind of whiny and high-pitched at times. I'm not like super deep and slow. My vocal cords vibrate way more. The higher you talk, they vibrate more. Now, of course, I talk like that, but then I also talk a lot and very, very fast. And it's causing my voice. So the doctor said, you've got to change the way you talk. Otherwise, you're going to continually lose your voice. So if I talk like this for the rest of the podcast, Lewis, you now know why.
Okay, I like it. I'll talk all twangy and like, hi, hello, hi, hey.
So here's my official.
It's the most annoying podcast.
So annoying. Everyone's unsubscribing right now. No, but it's true, though. There you go. Anyone who has the same problem, there you go. That's what you got to do. You got to talk slower and deeper.
Just don't get so excited. Just bring it down. You talk a little lower. Get the microphone right there. We're fine.
I'm bringing it down, baby.
Got 20 minutes of show left.
Whispering is the worst thing, apparently. It's the worst. It makes the vocal cords vibrate even more. Anywho, I think Diaz is going to lose the fight, if I'm honest.
I do, too.
I do. I think Diaz is going to lose the fight. Now, listen, bloody hell. I'm a fan of Pettis. I'm a fan of Diaz. I've just spoken highly of Diaz for the last 10 minutes. Nothing negative to say. It's just the fact that he's been away for 3 years, which isn't necessarily a bad thing because, you know, he does have, you know, he's a natural fighter. He loves to fight, so that's no problem. I don't think there's going to be any ring rust or anything like that. But I just don't know. Has he been in the gym for 3 years? Because if he hasn't, you know, that's going to affect him a little bit. Pettis has been fighting the whole time at multiple weight classes, still fighting world-class competition, and he's a very, very good striker. And I think what Pettis is going to do is exactly what Conor McGregor did in the second fight, which was chop down that lead leg. Diaz is very heavy on that lead leg. Conor kicked the hell out of it, took him off his feet a couple of times. And don't tell me that Pettis isn't watching that saying, yep, I'm going to do the same thing.
Yeah.
And Diaz, as great as he is, you know, his mentality of being a fighter so much, I think that might hurt him because he's not going to think, I need to change my style. He's like, nah, fuck that, man. I need to change shit. I still fuck this motherfucker up. You know what I'm saying? So, like, fucking kick my leg, bitch. I take you down. I choke you out, man.
You got Mexican there, really Mexican at the end. I like it. Yeah, I agree with you that, the data's there for Pettis to emulate. You know, the 3 years off, big problem. The Diaz brothers in general, have we seen them evolve much as fighters? Have they gotten better because the competition's gotten better? They fought in sort of to the competition. Yeah, but it doesn't seem like the Diaz brothers are like George St. Pierre, right? Where they go, shit, I had a problem there. Well, I need to go address that in every way in the gym, and I need to bring in five different doctors and coaches to figure out a way. They're not those guys. They don't even see the problem. They lose fights, and they're like, yeah, motherfucker, I won that fight. Sorry, bitch. And you're like, what? And everyone cheers them, and they're like, they're in their own psychotic world, which is the reason I love them. They're so badass. Like, dude, Nick Diaz after the GSP fight was like, yeah, I won that fight. I'm like, what? What are you talking about? There's no metric that you won that fight. Yeah. But he will tell you straight up that he won that fight, and I love that. I really love that attitude, but I don't believe...
Go on.
Well, sorry, I was going to say, I just don't believe that Nate Diaz has been in the gym evolving, learning new tricks, changing the things that were wrong with his game plan. And if he had been doing that over the past 3 years, like George St. Pierre was doing, you know, you saw him with gymnastics coaches and doing like crazy shit. Nice microphone, by the way. It looks like a Star Trooper's dick.
Well, it's been thrust into my mouth many times over the course of the evening. No, you're right. But the thing is, as a fighter, you do... Well, you've got to be realistic with yourself, but you also do need that kind of delusion, to be honest. You still got to have that confidence. And Diaz still firmly believes he won that second fight with Conor McGregor. It was close as hell. Honestly, I think probably Conor did take it, but it was one of those fights you could argue it both ways. Harrington, welcome back to the Believe You Me podcast. I believe you have, because I saw in your notes, you want to break this down, apparently. Is that correct? So sorry.
I mean, it makes no sense. He's so good when I'm not here. Do I intimidate you? Is that the problem?
Hold on. Let me just bring this up. Pettis versus Diaz. He's got all the notes. And then I believe he says... No, you put something in the notes, Harrington, okay, that you wanted to come on and explain. We've been ramping towards this point for a while. I'm going to ask you, your microphone's turned off. You're at the other side of the studio eating Cheetos and looking for things to steal. Come on, bro. This was your time.
Fucking Harrington, homeless cat eating Cheetos. Let's go.
Somebody did call me a happy hobo, and I really stuck with me. I kind of want that as a T-shirt. I don't... sorry, we're just trying to figure out things in here. Which one were you talking about?
He doesn't know what you're talking about.
I don't. Bisping, so
it's okay. It's fine. Well, Harrington, what do you think of this? Me and Bisping are both leaning toward Pettis in this fight, the layoff being a major factor in this. Also, when you look at who Pettis has lost against recently, Poirier, Max Holloway, Tony Ferguson, I mean, the best of the best, sometimes you forget. Sometimes you go, oh, he's had some losses, and you go, oh, no, he's only lost to the absolute best of those three divisions. So what do you think of? Do you think we're wrong here? Do you think Nate Diaz comes back and wins?
Yeah, I'm all in on Diaz. I was talking to Dave Smith about this yesterday. I don't know a time where Anthony Pettis has been dragged into deep water and he's recovered. You know, somebody like Nate Diaz, I think, can take the biggest, baddest shots that Pettis can throw and will still be there coming at him in the second and third round. I think Nate Diaz just gets it done with volume.
It's not deeper water, though, because it is a three-round fight, right?
Bam, 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 bam. That's what I was just about to say, because the deeper water, I mean, going from five rounds to doing three rounds, it's a big, big difference. And if Pettis has success early, chopping down the legs, throwing a lot of leg kicks and all the rest of it, and uses movement and to counter Diaz's forward pressure, because, you know, Diaz is probably going to come out throwing one, two shots, right? Or throwing a little hook slap here and there. He does throw a few kicks, but kicking is not his strong suit. It's his boxing and jiu-jitsu. And he has, you know, not the best takedown game. He's not the strongest wrestler, you know, but that's no disrespect. He gets the job done with his hands and his jiu-jitsu. That's his style. I'm not saying that in a detrimental fashion. I think, and over a three-round fight, if Pettis can get ahead for the first two rounds, he's fucked, you know? So Diaz needs to realize he hasn't got any time to waste. You know, listen, can he win the fight? Of course he can. Can Pettis win the fight? Of course he can. And I just think, stylistically, I just think Pettis has cleaner, crisper, more diverse striking.
The kicks, I think, will be a huge factor in this fight, right? So Nate really has no kicks. You know, Pettis has kicks for days all over the place. Yep. Crazy angles can, you know, I think Diaz, he sometimes he can be complacent with what he does. Like, he'll sit there and he'll just box you and he'll be losing the fight, and there doesn't seem to be any sort of urgency beyond that. He's a killer and he'll just always continue to fight. But I think that, yeah, you're right. He's going to have problems with the diversity of Pettis. I think Pettis is going to have way too many different angles to come at him and way too much space between him. If Diaz can get inside, he can outbox him. But even the boxing, it's like debatable. I mean, Diaz is a great boxer, but, you know, Anthony Pettis, that's his bread and butter, is striking.
Yeah, 100%. Oh, I got to stop saying that. Somebody talked shit on Twitter the other day saying, do a shot every time Michael Bisping says 100% when I was commentating. And now I do notice myself saying it. So shame me next time I do. No, the problem as well, potentially for Diaz, is that Pettis is one of, you know, he's a legendary fighter. He was the Wheaties box guy, right? He was a WEC champion, came to the UFC, got the belt, right? And then he kind of went on a skid, shall we say? But as you said before, the people that he lost to were the cream of the crop. You know, Barboza, Holloway, Gaethje, or whoever it was you mentioned. I haven't got his record in front of me right now. But still, now he's moved up a weight class. He takes on Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, who is a very, very high-level fighter. Knocks him out right at the end of the round. Okay, admittedly, he was losing, but he knocks him out, right? I don't think Wonderboy had ever been knocked out before. Didn't get knocked out against Tyron Woodley, but he gets knocked out against Pettis. So all of a sudden, his stock in the welterweight division is high. If he wants to reclaim those glory days when he was on top of the sport, when he was put on a Wheaties box, when he made his name, that made him a legend in his hometown, that brought him all the money, the fame, the glory that he now receives, right? If he wants to get all that back, Jesus Christ, knocking out Wonderboy Thompson and then beating Nate Diaz back to back, that's fucking huge. So he's got so much motivation in this fight because everybody knows, Pettis knows, everyone's tuning in to watch Diaz fight, right? And he's going to take all that glory. He's going to take all that momentum. Beat Wonderboy. Beat Diaz. Holy shit. You know, we might have another potential contender at 170. So there's so much motivation for him.
For sure. You beat Nate Diaz. You're right there in that conversation. It doesn't matter. He's just too much of a star. It doesn't matter that he has 3 years off. And the other thing that's great for Anthony Pettis is that Nate Diaz is a very small 170-pounder. So it's not like this is his new home at 170 pounds. He's fighting another guy who spent most of his career at 155 and essentially should be fighting at 155 pounds. So it's sort of a little bit of a cheat. It reminds me of when Conor fought Nate at 170. It's like, yeah, you guys are 255-pounders. Let's get real.
No, I know. That whole dialogue that, whoa, Conor's coming up and fighting somebody at 170. No, he's not. Nate Diaz is a 155-er. Nate Diaz is coming back for maybe a one-time fight at 170 pounds against Anthony Pettis, who honestly is a fucking 155. Okay, yeah. But Diaz can't be bothered cutting the weight. You know why? Because it fucking sucks. And I don't think people should cut weight anyway. All the people at 170 should go to 185. 185 should go to 205, so on and so forth. But I kind of lost my flow there. Where was I
going?
It's
okay. No, we were talking about Pettis being 155 and giving Nate credit for, or either one of them really credit. This is a 155-pound fight. That's the reality what this is.
Yes.
And one of them are going to get, going to move forward way forward at 170 with a win in this division.
Yeah, 100%. And let's look at Diaz. When he did go up to 170 officially in the past, he came back down to 155 because he was too small.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw, but remember what Rory McDonald did to Nate Diaz?
Suplexed him to hell. It was nuts. Like five suplexes in a row. It was awesome.
Yeah, threw him around like a rag doll. And that's no shame to Diaz. It's just there's weight classes for a reason. The guy was just too big and, you know, to be fair, too good at the time. So, yeah. So, anyway, so there you go. My official pick. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if I'm wrong, much like the previous fight. But I'll go with Pettis. I'll go with Pettis. What do you say, Lewis?
I think I'm leaning toward Pettis, too. I'm rooting for Nate so hard. What are the odds? What are the odds, Harrington? Do we have them? What the Vegas odds are?
It's pretty close. Nate Diaz is plus 110. Anthony Pettis minus
Why are you whispering? What's going on with your voice right now?
What?
Why are you going like, oh, Harrington.
I said earlier, if you whisper, it's worse for your diaphragm. You have to talk like this and project your voice, but in a deep, calm fashion.
Okay, that is Pettis at minus 130. Nate Diaz getting back at plus 110.
Yeah, it's too close to put any money.
Yes, it's Nate Diaz at minus 110. You're still whispering. I don't understand. Yeah, who cares? I'm not bothered. I've got Pettis.
I'm leaning toward Pettis because of everything we discussed, but I will be rooting hard for Nate Diaz. Huge Nate Diaz fan. Main event.
All right, you start the main event. I need to rest my voice. I'm going to be talking on air with no voice. So give me a minute to rest and stare at you.
Okay, no, it's
I just
want
to look at you and imagine you're thrusting things.
Stare at these fucking lips. Maybe you could thrust one into my mouth next time we hung out.
Bro, listen, 2019, baby boy. You never know.
Grow up. All right, Mike, really quick, we got to talk about Whoop, which I love. Whoop, W-H-O-O-P. So excited to have them on board. Perfect fit for the show. It's a performance tool to change the way that you track your fitness and optimize your training. It's a heart rate monitor for your wrist that connects to their app, and it gives you the absolute best analytics and insights into your recovery, strain, and sleep. After every workout, Whoop gives you a strain score that lets you know how strenuous your workout was and how much rest you're going to need, which is so important. Mr. Bisping, as you were traveling through your crazy illustrious career through the UFC, okay? Imagine having this type of technology. If you would have known how much to rest from a scientific standpoint, how much to rest, how much harder to work, how much your body was putting out, not just for how you feel, which is one side of it, but actually some hard data, how much faster would you have gotten to that UFC middleweight title? I think you would have won it years before.
Oh, I would have won the UFC title before I got to the UFC. It would just would have been a formality. People would have been like, this guy is using state-of-the-art technology. It's crazy. He has an app on his phone, or he has like some weird device called Whoop. Whoop? What is this? It's crazy. It's space age, but my God, it delivers results.
Side note, Whoop was not developed by NASA. All right, continue.
No, I know that. I know that. And I don't think anyone else really believes me. But what they
NASA's
should believe
a real
is
company.
This.
I don't think you can say that in the this is an ad read, everyone. I don't think we can legally say that it's technology developed by NASA.
It's a term. It's an expression, okay? If you say it's NASA technology, it sounds like good technology. Of course it's not developed by NASA. If it was developed by NASA, you wouldn't get this amazing promo that we're offering because NASA are cheap fucks. We know this, but don't Whoop. Oh no. Oh no, not Whoop. If you use the code BELIEVE after you go to whoop.com, then use the code BELIEVE, you'll get 15% off. And what will that do? Well, you'll have the built-in sleep coach that will analyze your sleep cycles, sleep quality, consistency, and provide optimal sleep times. It will tell you how to adjust your workouts for what is needed, how strenuous you want to go. Maybe you're working out too hard. Maybe you're not burning enough calories. Maybe you're not pushing it quite as hard as you should. Whoop will give you all of that information. So go to whoop.com, use the code BELIEVE, and you'll get 15% off a 12 to 18 month membership. Whoop. WHOOP.com. Use the code BELIEVE, 15% off for a 12 or 18 month membership. You'll love it. I stand by that. I have it. It's great. I recommend it. And I mean that. Back to the show, baby boy.
All right. So, yeah, main event, Daniel Cormier, Stipe Miocic, part two. Let's see. What did Harrington write? Greatest heavyweight of all time versus the champ. So, wait, Stipe is the greatest heavyweight of all time?
He's defended the belt the most times. He's the most decorated heavyweight.
Is he the greatest heavyweight of all time? I don't think anybody, no offense to Stipe, he's awesome. I love Stipe. But even defending the belt more times than anybody, does that define him as the greatest heavyweight of all time?
It defines him quite rightly as the most successful heavyweight of all time.
That doesn't mean greatest. I know a lot of successful people that stink. You know?
Yeah, but he's the most successful, and one would think that success and greatness or ability, you know, would go hand in hand. You know, and if to go out there and defend it three times, I would lean towards that. Because if other people couldn't defend it three times, you know, then maybe they weren't as good, or maybe the competition was worse. You know, so there is factors that come into play, but he's definitely the most successful. Who did Stipe defend the belt against?
That's what I'm looking up right now, because the more you think about it, like I was about to shit on it, but then I'm going like, who would be considered a greater heavyweight? And I guess it's depending on how you define great, because Fedor obviously is the one that everyone talks about, but he never fought in the UFC. A lot of questions there. What would have happened had he ever come to the UFC? I don't think he would have been able to compete. You know, really, there's been nobody else who's had that. So Randy Couture was great, I guess, for his time. Let's see. Stipe Miocic. All right, here is his record. His last fight was to Daniel Cormier, where he lost the belt, and he defended the belt against Francis Ngannou, Junior Dos Santos. Alistair Overeem, and he won the belt from Fabricio Werdum, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So, I mean, the greatest of all time, it just depends on how you define greatest of all time. Because when you look at Stipe, he won the belt from Fabricio Werdum. Incredible. Alistair Overeem, Junior Dos Santos, Francis Ngannou. Yes, this is the most amount of defenses, but is that more impressive than Randy Couture? Is that more impressive than Fedor Emelianenko? I mean, there are people that... I mean, who are the other people that would be in the conversation for greatest heavyweight of all time? Tim Sylvia?
Well, but hold on a minute. Well, no, Tim Sylvia would not be in it, okay? Just like he's not in the Hall of Fame, okay? There's a reason he's not in there. But when you read out those names, they are impressive names. Francis Ngannou, right? He's not a champ, but he's still one of the most scariest human beings on the face of this planet. Junior Dos Santos, Fabricio Werdum, and who was the other one?
Alistair.
Alistair Overeem. Oh my God, you're talking four of the all-time greats. Dos Santos, Overeem, Werdum, and Ngannou.
And then he's also got wins over Mark Hunt, Andre Arlovsky, Gabe Gonzaga, Fabricio Maldonado. All right, well, Fabio Maldonado, now it's falling off. What, Roy Nelson?
Whoa. He has a win over Fabio Maldonado.
He does.
See, this is the thing. We forget about these things.
Fabio. Right?
He has a legit win over Fabio Maldonado. Okay? Let me just go off on a side note here. Fabio Maldonado, I'm joking. He's tough as hell. And by the way, I do sign off on the fact that when you listen to that and you look at the resume, I think it's fair to say the greatest heavyweight of all time. I really do. Fabio Maldonado, I fought on the same card as him. UFC 186. When he fought Rampage Jackson, and God bless him, poor guy. You know what I mean? Listen to what I'm about to say, and I'll never forget it. And my heart just went out to him, because you know fighters, they go out there and if you're a successful fighter, you've got money. And, you know, there's a lot of poor people in Brazil, and God bless him. I saw him in the hotel. And, he's a nice guy. He doesn't speak English very well, but he speaks a little bit. And I'm like, hey, Fabio, how you doing? You good? You good? He's like, oh, yes, now very, very happy. I make weight. So now I go eat. And I'm like, yeah, me too. And I'm like, I'm off to like a nice steakhouse or whatever. And he holds up a loaf of bread.
Oh,
he's very happy. I can go eat now. And he's going to go to his room and make himself some sandwiches. And I just thought, I love this guy. Do you know what I mean? He was so happy holding up the cheapest loaf of bread from the supermarket you could buy. Do you know what I mean? And he had, and I just thought, God bless him. I hope he fucking wins. Do you know what I mean? I hope he gets fired the night. You know, he didn't and he got cut. So God bless him. But yeah, I mean, that was just a very endearing thing. And it just shows, you know, I was the same way as well. I don't forget that. And it was just reminding me. I'm not talking shit at all. So yeah, Stipe's the best. Stipe's the best there has been. But that doesn't matter. It does not matter. You know why? Because DC knocked him the F out in the first round. Simple as that. So right now, DC is the man. You can't sit back and rest on the laurels of your past achievements, right? Who cares? It's what are you doing now? What have you done today? You can't say, well, hold on. Back in the day, I was a champion of the world. Well, you're not a champion of the world anymore, are you? You know, but he does have a chance to rectify that, get revenge, whatever you want to call it, on Saturday night.
Yeah. There's an argument that what Cain Velasquez did is more impressive.
Okay, all right. Well, listen, let's not hang on. Is he the greatest or is he not the greatest? Right? It's up for debate. At the very least, we can agree that is debatable the best of all time. That's still pretty good, Lewis.
Debatably the best of all time. Fine, I'll give him that. One of the best heavyweights of all time. Why can't that be good enough for him?
Bro, you were one of the best.
One of the best at anything in the world. I would be so happy with that.
Hey, Stipe, how you doing, man? Hey, great to meet you. You're one of the best heavyweights we've ever seen. It's like, you're going to walk up to me and insult me like that to my fucking face? Get the fuck out of here. No, you can't have a picture. You know, it's pretty insulting.
It's not, though. If somebody said you are one of the best in the world in a literal sense, that is one of the biggest compliments you could possibly give somebody. You were one of the best fighters in the world, and that's just not good enough for Mike Harrington or Stipe Miocic.
I know. I'm being sarcastic. Of course it's good enough, you know, but what I do like about Stipe is that he's pissed. You know, he's angry, you know. He's got no reason to be angry. He got beaten fair and square. DC's a great guy, and I get it. When I've been in fights against people, you build up this, you make it emotional. You make it personal because he's taken what Stipe worked so hard for, you know. And DC's now talking a bit of shit in DC fashion, saying, listen, you made a mistake because after this, you're going to be done. And it's a good point because if DC does go out there and beats him again in a similar fashion, or even just gets a decision, then the argument's closed. You know, it's done. Two in a row, baby boy. There ain't no third one.
That's it. And to be honest with you, I'm sure that pressure has to be beginning in Stipe's head. But I do understand why Stipe is a little pissed, right? So the Brock Lesnar drama happens. Daniel Cormier says, nope, I'm not giving Stipe another fight. Sorry. Stipe is like, dude, I am debatably one of the best heavyweights in the world, at the very least. That's not even up for debate. At the very least, debatably one of the...
Stipe's like, a guy came up to me and wanted a picture and said, you're one of the best heavyweights we've ever seen. He's like, trust me, this is what happens to me on a regular basis. People literally say, one of the best. Is that not good enough for you, Stipe? What is your fucking problem? Wow. Take the compliment.
It's not even Stipe, it's Harrington. We're just trashing Stipe for it.
I'm not trashing Stipe at all.
We're fucking around. I love Stipe.
Yeah, I'm a Matt. Me too. He's awesome. Let me tell you this. I've had the pleasure of hanging out with him a few times. You know, nothing crazy. We just did a couple of appearances together and whatnot. Great guy. Super humble. Down to earth. And of course, one of the greatest heavyweights of all time.
Easily one of the best. So, but here he's pissed because he wants to get, he just broke the record for the most UFC heavyweight title defenses of all time. He's a badass dude. He's winning fights, in impressive fashion. And then he comes out and Cormier wins the belt. And he's like, all right, cool. I deserve a rematch. If anybody deserves an immediate rematch, it would be me. And they just wouldn't give it to him. And he sort of sat in this limbo for a while. And I think he, whether it's displacing that anger justifiably or not, I think he looks at Daniel Cormier as being the reason that he's had to sit on the sidelines because Daniel Cormier wouldn't give him that rematch. I don't know if that's true, but it seems like that's the case. Like that fight would have been signed way earlier had Cormier signed on the dotted line.
Yeah, maybe. I agree. But the reality is they are rematching. So let's get to that because I got to wrap it up soon. So in the first fight, here's what I think happened. And I don't mean any disrespect to Stipe when I say this. I think you looked at DC. There's obviously a big size difference. Now, there wasn't a weight difference. DC stepped onto the scale heavier than Stipe the first time around, which shocked everybody. But DC, you know, he's naturally a big man. He's naturally a heavy and a rotund man, shall we say, being politely and respectful, but he's super fucking powerful. That's a fact. And when you're not cutting weight, you get more powerful. We see it time and time again. People move up a weight class and they have more power. I think Stipe thought incorrectly, I'm going to bully this little man around. He showed him no respect. He thought he could outstrike him. He thought he could clinch with him. He thought he could throw him around. He's like, fuck this guy. I can wrestle as well, you know? And maybe, again, I'll say it, a victim of his own success a little bit. Now, the fight, Stipe was probably ahead on the scorecards prior to that knockout happening, but which is a stupid point to make because it's totally irrelevant because he got knocked out in the first round. But he was, you know, it's not like DC went in there and, you know, manhandled him and destroyed him. You know, it was a competitive fight and Stipe was probably ahead and he got caught. I see, with your finger raised. Go ahead.
Well, this is interesting because in Harrington's notes, he did break down the fight metric breakdown and they were basically even. You know, when you look at they were basically landing 50% of their shots. I guess Cormier was ahead of DC with one shot, and that was the shot that ended the fight. So very, very, very close fight leading into it. And maybe you're right. Maybe Stipe was underestimating Daniel Cormier, and we might, I mean, no matter what, we know for a fact Stipe is not going to be underestimating Daniel Cormier in this fight. No questions asked. So who knows? I don't know how much that's, and you could break it down better than anybody, but how much that psychological shit will play into his favor or against him.
Well, I think if he looks at it from the outside and, you know, analytically, you know, then he's got to give DC more respect in this fight. You know, I thought in the first fight, I thought he was going to, you know, use his boxing, use his footwork, you know, kind of like he did against Francis Ngannou. Do you know what I mean? Of course, he used his wrestling against Ngannou as well, but you got to avoid the clinch with DC. That's where he wants you. That's his fucking world. And as we see, if he's breaking that clinch, he can deliver a knockout punch as well. Not to mention the fact DC is an incredible wrestler. That's what he does. He takes people down, he grinds them out, and then he chokes them. You know, he's the king of the grind, or whatever it was Goldberg used to say all the time. But embrace the grind. That was it. But yeah, this time, if Stipe uses a different approach, if he uses his jab, 1-2, uses the boxing, you know, limits the kicks and utilizes a lot of footwork. And then once he starts breaking him down and maybe connects with some flush shots and has Daniel hurt a little bit, you know, I could see that as being a route to victory. But I could easily sit here and give you a route to victory for DC as well. Fact is, super, super close, competitive fight. Both guys have a way to win. Both guys have the championship mindset. Both guys feel that they're going to win the fight. That's what makes this so awesome. Both guys truly believe in their heart of hearts that they're going to fucking win this fight.
I'm getting goosebumps.
Stipe thinks, you little motherfucker, you got lucky. You caught me with that shot. You took my belt. You took my title. You took my respect and credit that I built over years. So he's pissed at DC. DC's like, listen, motherfucker, that weren't no luck. I'm better than you. I'm the greatest of all time. And they both believe that. It ain't talk. It ain't hype. It ain't bullshit. They both truly believe that. And that's what makes this fight so fucking awesome.
Yeah, I'm really, really pumped about it. Very excited. You were going to be in Hawaii with the family. Are you watching the fights live? Are you going to find the time? You have to. You have to. Not this fight.
100% I will be. And I'm looking forward to that. It's going to be fun. I'm with some good friends from Playline. We fly. I do the Contender shortly. I'm going to head over there real soon. And then I work all day. I fly home tonight. I get back at midnight or so. I'll go home. I get picked up at 5 a.m. by a limo. We go to the hotel. We go to the airport. We fly to Hawaii. It's nonstop, baby boy. But when I get there, feet up, rest time, give me a little cheeky drink. I'm on holiday. And Saturday, I'm going to find a good spot. We're going to go watch the fights. We're going to have fun. It's going to be great. I can't wait. And you know what? It would have been – it's kind of annoying. See, hear my voice. I'm going to talk more like this. It's annoying because I'm at almost every bloody UFC event these days. And when there's one in my backyard down the street, I'm not there. But I am looking forward to going as a fan with some friends and watching the fight in Hawaii. That does sound like a nice night as well.
Yeah, just some tiki torches and some grass skirts and some luau dancing and UFC fighting. It's an amazing, amazing time. I think I also am going to Hawaii myself a week after you come back, which is so fucking annoying. Same island, same everything. It's the most annoying thing in the world.
Really is fucking stupid. But I will tell you this, though, and I did say we should do a trip soon anyway. Let's take the boys, maybe go camping, or maybe we'll do something else, but we'll have to do something like that soon. And on that note, we'll say goodbye. No questions today. I've got shit to do, people to see, many people to see about many different dogs, fat to chew, fights to commentate, flights to catch. Lewis, you're the man.
Mike, I'll tell you this much.
Very, very soon.
You are one of the best podcasters in the world. I'll tell you right now. Unquestionably. One of the best.
So who would you say is like better than me?
Well, you're one of the best, you know.
Yeah, I know, but I'm just saying, if I'm one of the best, like who else am I up against other than yourself?
There's Rogan.
I mean, give me a name.
There's Rogan, Brendan Schaub, Brian Callen.
I mean, yeah, Rogan's like legendary. You know what I mean? But he's been around. Maybe his best years are behind him. Maybe he's coming towards the end of his career. Maybe, you know, that right hook from the clinch, you know, maybe that would drop Rogan as well. Do you know what I mean?
That's true. Wait, what? Are you threatening Joe Rogan? What just happened?
No. I'm using Rogan as Stipe, okay?
Okay.
I'm not threatening violence upon Joe Rogan. I'm like, when I see Joe Rogan, I am going to fuck him up. No. He thinks he's the best podcaster. He's got it coming to him. No, that is not what I'm saying. All right. Before we say anything too offensive, thanks for thrusting it into my mouth, and we'll see you on the next show. Enjoy the fights.